You are listening to Let's Go JoJo, the weekly JoJo's Bizarre Adventure podcast from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
It's Niall.
Guten Abend.
And it's me, Brian. Tonight's episode is Notorious B.I.G. or Notorious Chase. I still don't understand
this. I'm confused about this. Yeah.
Well, it chases you around.
No. Like,
that's not what I'm confused about.
When the guy when Giorno is reading the word written down that I can see fucking says chase, and the subtitle says he's saying chase, but I can hear him say big, what's happening?
Notorious big.
It's strange. Did they go in and edit what was written down in the show?
Possibly. I mean, it is
but
possible.
But that was all their subtitle budget for translating Italian.
I know it's possible. It's definitely possible with certain subtitling software, whether it is in the Crunchyroll's subtitling
software.
Yeah,
to change background stuff.
Mm. Yeah. Because they, when we did the Zero with Enforcer, the people who'd fan-subbed that had gone out of their way to translate every bit of important text which appears on the screen, even if it's only there for a brief moment.
Oh, that's gone up above and beyond, yeah.
Yeah, okay. It's only them and the people who've done the Psyche K fan subs.
Oh, which... God, yeah, those were... I mean, like, I understand the necessity of those, but they were impossible to fucking look at.
Oh, no, they were fine. Yeah, they were fine as fan subs. That's why I had to resort to fan subs, even though it's streaming in two different places, because while like Netflix is better than Funimation's, there's still bits they just can't translate because of the limitations of their software. But yeah, I don't know whether it was there in the animation originally, or they've altered the animation, or they can now alter it within the actual player.
Yeah.
But as you say, I was of the same opinion as you, Dwayne. I was like, what's going on? I don't, up is down, left is right. Nothing makes sense anymore. Even the characters are being influenced by the translations. So, where are we? This is episode 24, and they've got their plane. They're going to the airport, and they like keep everyone away from it as they do a thorough search to find out if anyone's in the plane, on the plane.
Around the plane.
Turned into parts of the plane.
Narancia is looking for, like, I think things in general, anything that puts out, what's it, CO2 he detects or something?
Yes.
So he can detect machines, potentially. And, yeah, and obviously Giorno can detect life forms, like he's in Star Trek or something, yeah.
Yeah, and Abaccio is using Moody Blues to learn how to pilot this plane.
What I fucking love about that is everyone's like, well, how's it going to work? I don't know, fucking, like... I think someone in the comments complained, is like, that's not what that software he's describing does. That's not autopilot. And it's like, Abaccio doesn't need to know how to fly the plane. His stand just needs to know how to fly the plane.
The plane didn't swim here. It must have landed at some plane flown at some point, so.
Let's see where we end up, guys. I don't fucking know. I'm gonna fucking play back this faceless pilot that I found.
Meanwhile, Trish notices that Bruno has an incredibly deep wound in his leg that appears not to be bleeding at all.
It's bothering me that no one is telling Bruno of all these horrible injuries that he has.
I think Bruno's aware of what's happening.
Is it like socially awkward? Oh, Bruno, you got a horrible gash in your leg there. You might want to get that looked at.
No, it's okay. I'm a tough gangster. Okay. So, okay. That's fine.
Well, the strange thing is that he doesn't appear to need looking at.
Yeah, but I mean, like, it's ruining the hem of his pants, is what I'm saying. The style points he's losing out on.
Then they see a suspicious man.
Like, the most suspicious guy. You could not, like, even unless he was wearing a sign that said stand user, which he pretty much was with the fashion, but, you know.
Mrs. got uncovered, though. He's like, buddy, step away from the plane. Come a little closer. Gonna fill you full of all 60 tiny little men. But he doesn't. But this friend doesn't approach and misses. Let's rip and just blows this guy full of holes. Like, okay, job done. That was easy. Surprisingly easy. Let's get on the plane. Let's get on the plane anyway without checking it twice or anything else for anything untoward happening.
Well, Giorno does check.
Giorno, he does check him for life, yeah. And he also says it's like, this was too easy. And Mr.'s like, what, are you saying fucking that my stand is shit?
Well, see, he checks the body just to make sure that it's dead, but didn't...
The fight was too easy.
Did he go to the plane again, is what I mean.
Yeah. He says he's scanning the plane the whole time, and I assume he says, I don't detect any life forms. I assume he means besides themselves.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, we later learned that he wouldn't, because when he finds a bunch of fingers, they have no life to them. They are just dead fingers.
And they were saying, it's like, oh, this changes the rules of stands. And I was thinking about it, I was like, oh shit, we've actually had like a dead stand before.
Yes.
So,
yeah. So we have knowledge that the characters don't.
Hmm. It's not a brand new stand thing he's met up that's bullshit. It's an old stand thing that was met up that was bullshit.
But I kind of freaked out because whose fucking fingers are these?
Yes.
and how did they get there?
Also, there appears to be more of them than there were when I looked last.
I just freaking out and saying, man, I thought there was only three in there, but I think it's four. I don't, it's too crazy. It's just some bad voodoo going on. Don't like it at all.
I feel like that would have been better in the comic where you can kind of flick back to the page and go like, he's fucking right, as opposed to having to rewind the video.
Bruno's like, we'll have to throw this out the plane. They go, well, no, I've heard that if you open the door, it's a bad move. We all get sucked out. Okay, everyone hang on to something. And he opens the zip and throws it out. And there's no, like, change in the pressure at all.
I guess because sticky fingers negates the pressure change. It's not like... when you open a door or a window gets smashed open, it's weird stand powers, so the pressurization thing doesn't apply.
Yeah. Oh, he was just so fast it didn't matter.
That's true as well. Yeah. Maybe planes need to be made of zips now. I don't know.
And that's when Giorno starts seeing the graffiti after they've done that.
Yeah. I just need to pull up the comic to see what it's saying. Actually, it was like,
I did take that thing down as well. I'll put it in the.
I just remembered that he was like, oh, this plane's disgusting. It's like a public toilet.
Yeah. And he keeps like pulling down like the passenger drinks thing and whatever. And it's like there's more fucking graffiti wherever he looks.
Yeah. It's like, oh my God, my body is being eaten. Oh, that betrayed a guy on a plane. He died with hate. Hate is his power source. Dying star at his stand. The name of the enemy stand is Notorious B.I.G. Help, please. It's too late. Before I die, I want to eat, some Parmesan cheese or some pizza from my hometown. No! I thought, this is really fucked up. How did they know what's happening?
Yeah. Are these like his thoughts, or are they like the thoughts he's gonna have moments later?
It sounds like, you know, the guy's being attacked on the plane, these are like their last words, which are somehow bringing up, or it's just like, we see then a drone has got a pen coming off his own hand, has been writing the things on the walls, apparently, as he's been doing that. I think it's just the stand trying to psych him out, saying, this is how this is all going to play out, because I'm going to kill all you dudes on here, and it's probably going to go to something like this.
Yeah, I think it's like like you're saying, it could be like a will thing, like that it's the, like you said, the last thoughts of the stand user, or that, because the stand, as they figure out, like and as is written down in the graffiti, it functions kind of automatically.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have any thoughts of its own. So obviously these are the last thoughts as it was going, as your man was dying, and it's still kind of stuck in the stand, something weird like that.
Actually, I can see now it signs it at the end, auditing Giorno Giovanna. So it's just like Notorious B.I.G. trying to psych him out by the look, by the sound of things. There's a pen coming off his hand, and there's another hand coming off his hand that's holding the pen. And it's like, oh gosh, that looks really gross. That guy's stand attached to me somehow, is trying to eat me alive. It says fucking Bannigan, cool experience. Oh shit, he's eating my stand jam as well. So, solution, it's worked multiple times previously in the series so far. I'm just going to cut off my own limbs and we'll deal with this later.
Then Mr. shoots the arm, and then four of his bullets are being eaten by, or four of the Sex Pistols, rather, are being eaten by the blob of flesh.
Yeah, the poor little guys are getting dissolved. It's like, no, number four, it's all coming out. Help me, please, mister. I'm melting. No.
Narantia pops out and he's kind of like, well, I don't, technically the bullets my thing shoot aren't part of my stand, so if I just fly at it, I'll probably be fine. But then it manages to be as fast as Aerosmith.
Mm.
And which he's surprised by, because initially it seemed rather just like a slow blob just hanging out in the corner. And is at that point Giorno explains to them that it reacts to
speed? Not yet. It's after Bruno tells Trish to hide in the cupboard.
That was it. Because, yeah, he starts punching the air just to attract its attention rather than it going for Trish. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's fucking him up because the sex pistols have been dissolved in the blob. That means Mr. Zoro's been incurring the same injury on himself. So he's full of holes. He's able to kind of dodge Aerosmith and just produce little arms and starts fucking stabbing into Aerosmith, and then as a result, Narantia as well. So it's messed him up as well. So he's down for the count too.
Hmm.
So like, shit, fucking picking out guys left and right.
What could Giorno do but cut his overarm off?
I think, does he punch through the, well, he obviously has the stand, punch through the windows to get it kind of sucked off his arm, but it's actually crawling up along his arm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he chops it up, his arm off with the glass from the fucking window.
Yes.
Yeah.
Jesus.
It's super fucking gross. And then it's like, okay, job done. And Trish is like, it's just there. Well, sure, it's a problem. You can just grow new ones, right? And it's like, you don't understand, says Bruno. You stand worth by punching things. If you can't punch things, you can't make his arms grow back. So he's lost his stand ability here forever. It's like, oh no.
And they're kind of screwed because they're like, oh shit, we have not only him needing healing, but the other two lads needing healing as well. He's taken out more than half the team before we've even arrived on the island.
Mm. So it's like, oh, this is really messed up. And it's like, oh, I don't know what the fuck I'm gonna do about this now. So they put the injured guys in a turtle and, you know, Bruno's up to the back here and says, what the fuck are you going to do? You can't go up with a game plan for this. While Trish sort of like, have to kind of ponder all about this and feeling a little put out because like all of these dudes are getting completely brutalized on her account. She feels like, oh, fucking, if only I just wouldn't stand. If only I was a bit more useful, this wouldn't be happening.
And she's kind of lamenting that it's like, she's doing it for her personal reasons, but they're doing it because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Makes her feel kind of like a real pill.
Yeah. But then there's something on the wing. Something on the wing.
Yeah, very timely with the Twilight Zone and revival.
Oh, that's true, actually, yeah. And
the second episode is a remake of that story.
They've remade that, like, they did that in the movie as well, didn't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm. Notorious B.I.G. is back because it can travel as fast as a fast moving object, target it can see, so I can move as fast as a plane and seemingly fly as well. So yes. It's back in. It's gonna get its way inside the plane, and Trish is being menaced by it. And it then she notices that there is a conspicuous ladybird brooch on the flowered plane that's pulsing about, and it's like, motherfucker! Before he chopped his arm off, Giorno turned his little brooch into a new hand for himself. So we still got a chance.
Well, except that makes it more, because her original plan was to move very slowly to the cupboard. Like, because she realized it's like only like fast movements it's going, so as long as it's not noticed.
Oh, that was so creepy, because she was moving not that fucking fast away, but it just going up and like touching her hand to determine how fast she was moving, and then kind of like slowly, it's slowly like forming a stand out of the flesh pile that it's been the entire episode, and it's just like crawling around the floor, and it's just, oh, it's so nasty.
So now she's got to figure out, how do I get that hand to Giorno without this thing getting me? And also, how do I stop it from getting the hand? Because it's looking at the hand now, because the hand's the thing making the most movement.
Yeah, because it's just, it's a brooch just twitching with new grown fingers. Just, again, super nasty.
Yes.
Mm.
I like the tension of this. I like the, like, I know Bruno is specifically in the episode. If only we weren't in an enclosed space, he wouldn't have taken out so many so quickly. And I was like, I'm kind of loving the fucking sheer terror of this episode. And just switching it to Trish is nice as well. Just kind of like, well, let's see how she handles it. Yeah.
Well, yes.
I wonder if she awakened to a stand ability as described in the opening credits.
Yeah.
And also hinted that in the episode title next.
One spicy lady. Yeah. You may notice you kind of a kind of semi-trend in the enemy stand users for really, well, actually not even enemy stand users, but for some of the stands, what, really into like dissolving bodies and invading them, some kind of fucking disease or something like that. He kind of is really big on that. There's another one like later on near the end, which also has a kind of body dissolving quality to it. So I don't know what kind of films that Araki was kind of watching at this moment in time to inspire all of that by just putting the blob on repeat.
The blob is probably one, probably some Cronenberg or something, right?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah. Existence was around this time.
Right.
There's a bit of John Carpenter as well.
Sure.
With the thing, and then kind of, not to give too much away, but sort of like the sort of atmosphere surrounding the ending and Mr. Transpired, there also got a bit of a kind of John Carpenter feel to it as well. More like something like The Prince of Darkness or fucking, you know, when it's sort of like a apocalypse sort of film. It's got a very foreboding, forbidding atmosphere around it too. So maybe it was, that was on his watch list at the time as well. That's a kind of feeling I get anyway.
He's very much so cribbing from some really fucking good sources though.
Yeah, good episode. Looking forward to the next. I'm curious as to whether they'll alter the opening and ending credits towards the end of the series.
I'm kind of hoping that what makes me like the opening song, I'm still not that gone in it. I can see what they're going for, but it doesn't seem to have the energy for me.
Oh, I really like it. I like the way it crescendos. It feels like it's heading towards the ending.
I feel like I'll probably like the full version of the song better, you know that way?
Whenever they
chop it down, I feel like it loses something.
That's the point. When they release the full version, I suspect that also may hint at changes to the opening, because that's how it worked on the last opening song for part four. Because all the bits with the episode where he reverses time on the opening credits.
Yeah.
That's in the full version of the song as well. So I'd heard that.
It's part of the music.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's why they like it releasing the song after the show or close to the end of the show makes more sense because it's actually like a fucking plot reveal.
Maybe there's just be bits of the song chopped out. I guess that would be the way it would work.
Key spoilers that have been chopped out until they're necessary. Yeah. Okay.
Okie doke. That's it for Let's Go JoJo, but we've still got many more things we watched from the podcast within the podcast. It's Let's Go! And for some reason I've got the 2018 schedule out. Let me switch tabs. There unfortunately isn't any Tiramisu to watch. Well, actually there is. There's like a whole bunch of extra episodes we've not talked about yet, but...
Oh, that's true, yeah.
I watched the middle ones. I've not watched the ones after this last season. The middle ones didn't seem to be that great. Episode 12 of Dororo, The Story of Banmon, Part 2. Okay, this is the point at which it basically says goodbye to any pretense of following the comic anymore.
Okay. I was wondering, did it follow any of the...
No. Basically, people who died were still alive. People who were still alive were dead. Entire scenes are flipped. Because in the comic, it's like when he's about to kill Hayakimaru, his dad is, but then he realizes Hayakimaru is his son and doesn't kill him. Whereas in this, when
get
he
him,
realizes...
Get him, everyone! But here's everyone, my son, kill that him. Guy!
Yeah.
He's being a real dick. Get him.
Yeah, and the little kid goes home, discovers his parents are dead, comes back, then gets shot full of arrows against the wall.
I wasn't expecting him to fucking have the happy ending.
But I thought there has to be some sort of positivity here.
There is
a sort of Dororo bleakness to it, but it wasn't delivered in the way I expected, as you kind of said last week, Brian. Because I thought, people are going to die. Well, one person certainly does die, but I'm not sure. I mean, maybe they got to her in time. But it wasn't like, oh, people are dead or whatever like that, or someone got murdered wrongfully. It was more of this... Hayakimaru is completely rejected by kind of everyone except Dororo, really. We get that his dad, Daigo, may have him killed. He's going to undo the curse, sort of unpack this, give him all his prosperity. like Von Tahomaro, he explains his ambivalence and then he eventually falls on one side of that and you can kind of see that. Did not expect, though, that his mother would say, I'm sorry, son, but I like money and I like people being happy here more than I love you. It's more valuable. I didn't expect his mother, after all this seeming like heartache and grief on her part, like genuine, definitely, but it would think maybe she would like try and accept him and bring it back in, but if it's saying, no, I can't take you back in, it's if it would undo, bring so much kind of pain upon these other people.
I think that's why she's been like praying and shit all this time. She knows what side of this she fucking falls down on, and she hates herself for it, you know?
Yeah. And Shakimaro, he was just, you know, it's a little bit kind of hyped up for this. Dora was saying, wow, you found your mom. It's really good. And he's just like, mother. Like one of his few words he says, and he's like smirking a little bit. He's like, oh,
right, the idea that it's like, oh shit, I got a family. That's crazy.
Could be a chance here. It was obviously a bit of tension because my biological father was trying to kill me, but maybe we can work something out. But even she, just rejects him in the end. And that's, I think, in its own way, a lot harsher than anybody getting killed off or any kind of like murder fest going on at this point. It's really cuts you more to the soul than it does anything else.
Whereas in the comic, it's him who rejects them. He denies that they are his family and points out his family is the doctor who found him and built all his prosthetics. He basically rejects them outright and then refuses to have a bloody revenge on them.
Okay.
They just get overthrown instead. And in the comic, the father's trying to bring him back into the family and the mother's trying to get him to acknowledge that he's her son. And yeah, he just like, nope, my family would not be people who would so cruel as to put a baby, sell all the baby's body parts to demons and then just let it drift down a river.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Like, the family is the people who care for you rather than the people who fucked you over from your inception.
Yes. But again, the comic Hayakibaru is very different. It has a very different attitude to this one.
Yeah. I assume he said that super snarkily in the comic.
Yeah.
Like, does Hayakibaru, like, did he understand the ways of the actions that have transpired around him and his situation? Like, does he, did he have, like, the full, like, understanding of his relation with this guy and what he's done to him? Everybody else knows, but I'm not sure if he gets the whole picture himself.
I get what you mean, because before it wasn't clear how he understood the world. Did he understood that weird blobby shape to be the doctor who helped him with the prosthetic limbs and everything? Or did he understand it? There's that familiar blobby shape. Was it all like weirdly abstract to him beforehand? But I feel like at this stage, he has a pretty good idea of things. When people ask him, hey, what's your name? He says, Hayakimaru. You know, he understands, oh, that's another person. I think his perception is definitely much higher than that of the abstraction he was initially dealing with.
Yeah.
But
and also he's had to listen to Dororo probably constantly talking about families.
Okay.
That's true as well, yeah.
Every person.
Yeah, it can be like challenging to infer like why he's thinking sometimes, but maybe it's
I feel like he's a much more basic understanding of the world as it is, because he's learning a lot of shit brand new, even though obviously he has a full command of language and everything all of a sudden, just so he can interact with the fucking plot, I suppose.
I suppose it's still waters run deep as well. So.
That's true as well. And like you say, it was very clear how he felt about the idea that he has a family. He seemed quite pleased with it, which is, he's never actually, not that he hasn't at all, but he's very rarely shown being pleased with any fucking thing. He just sort of exists. But in this case, it was like, oh, fuck, I might have a tie to other people and individuals. And obviously then that's taken away from him.
Yeah.
And we also get a return of the guy whose arm he cut off.
Saw the guy sweating in the background. I was like, is that that fucking guy? And it was.
So it's a pretty simple episode. The Dororo and the other kid are being captured by the Asakuras. armies, and they're planning on going to hang these guys on the wall as an indication that they're going to go to war with Daigo.
Well, also they know the wall isn't haunted anymore because Yakumaru scared all the foxes away.
Yeah. And meanwhile, yeah, Daigo himself is like, oh dear, it's my no good son, or my good son, and but a lot of the conflict is with the younger son, knowing that his parents have done something terrible, and them trying to explain why they did the terrible thing, and him trying to come to terms with that. And yeah, he ends up dueling with Hayakimaru, basically saying, I know it's terrible that what my parents did to you, and I'm sorry about that. But
it's brought a lot of good for the people. Yes. So, and he's obviously a guy who cares about his own people.
But then visually, by the end of the episode, are you sure that was what was bringing the good to the people? Was it actually the mum's prayers, and now that is gone?
Yeah. And it's all this shit about, the greater good.
I'm wondering if that also was a bonus for Hayakimaru or something like that as well. The prayers his mother was doing. Is that something he's going to lose out on now? Because he's been pretty badass up to this point.
We were right that they do all have a slightly different aura to everybody else. Dwayne.
Okay.
The dad and the brother.
I thought it was like a familiar aura.
Yeah,
or
the
like
monk
that.
Comments that, the son, the whatever his name, Todoharu?
Tahomaru.
Tahomaru, that's it, yeah.
Tahomaru sounds right.
That he had a similar aura to.
I couldn't be sure that I was seeing it for sure, because it is a super abstract thing to try and remember.
The book kind of goes, well, this is too hard for me, I shall just bear witness to it.
Out of my hands.
A little shirking of any sort of responsibility there.
Well, he's just a wandering fucking vagabond who gets involved in shit if he feels like it. It's like, hey, I thought you could settle up there, but there's a big monster there. I'm not going to fucking fight it. You know, he's just a random fucking nosy motherfucker.
What you see in the Hall of Hell now, and it's like, what the fuck is this? I'm out. I'm out. No way.
Yeah. It's a bit
this
too
shit
much,
is fucked. I'm not going to be anywhere next or near this.
I like the way your man and his brother were fighting, and then he sort of takes his brother's eye without, as even like an afterthought. It was like, wait, did he just lose his eye just there? And it's like, yep, that's how he lost it. It wasn't even a thing for Hayakimaru. It was just like,
Well, it was
on the way to leaving. Yeah.
Got to rescue that kid and also deal with this fox who's come back.
Yeah. Like, he had more important things to do while taking his brother's eye as an afterthought kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, his brother has narrowed his focus. So, so he only needs the one eye, so it was kind of a nice narrative little trick there.
I mean, like, shit. Hayakimaru still doesn't have any fucking eyes, so he's still got one up on him there.
But he sees with the soul, which is, sees everything more clear than your puny eyes can.
And we get a nice bit where Dororo stops Hayakimaru going berserk when that one-armed guy shows up again.
It kind of, like, initially watching the show, I was kind of questioning why it's called Dororo rather than Hayakimaru. And I can see him being like the emotional core. When he's captured with the kid, he's trying to escape, whereas the kid is given into the spear, and it's Dororo trying to escape that gives the other kid hope and everything.
Yes. Yeah.
He's really like a really strong emotional core for everything else around him, even though the plot is like tertially fucking involving him, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that drive to survive is what he's got from his parents.
Mm-hmm.
Well, his mother particularly. And so I think it's like can't at no point can Dororo ever like put aside the effort that the mother made to keep them alive.
It's instilled in him.
And they're going to head off. There's nothing here for them now. As it's been revealed what terrible parents Hayakimaru had.
But they'll be back.
I'm sure they will be.
There is some kind of worst of the worst demon, like this.
Oh, hanging in the back.
Stashed away in the back of the Hall of Hell. And, some of the, what we're going to see into like the prayer statue that his man was giving offerings to. It's since have something about it that's holding that back, because the crack in it corresponds to the crack that appears in the statue at the back of this year. Or it seemed to anyway, in my eyes.
When the mum stabbed herself, it's like there was like the big glow came out of the statue and seemed to disappear, but when the monk picks it up, there's still a glow, but it's fading.
Yeah. I was wondering, was the glow, like, the glow seemed to more resemble the, anything made of wood or plant matter. It tended to have that glow, but I was like, is there anything of the holiness or the protection or anti-curse or curse that it was involved in? Yeah.
We shall see, but it will be another fortnight because there wasn't an episode this week because we're recording.
Ooh. Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah. We know they've already finished, Kobayashi already finished his episode weeks ago, so. They're well ahead of schedule. Next up is Mob Psycho 100 to episode 12, The Battle for Social Rehabilitation, tilde friendship, tilde. In which Mob tries two approaches to deal with the dad after he gets past, what's his name, the guy with the umbrella?
Serizawa.
Yes. It works on him, his 100% friendship. As basically he points out that, Suzuki has taken advantage of him. He's offered him a life, but for what end? He's not treating you as a friend. He's just treating you as a tool.
Yeah. And Dimple is agape at this point. But that's you. Oh, I see.
I was wondering, was his percentage going up when he realizes, like, wait a fucking minute. But no, it's just like, I think it's that he is talking about himself and he's finding a kinship with this complete fucking stranger.
Yes.
I like the theme of the episode kind of being like, some people you can talk to and some motherfuckers ain't going to listen.
Yeah, well, I think Mob is aware of what's going on. Because I can remember back in that whole little thing where he was having this tiff with Reagan and they make up again. It's like, Master, I know you haven't got any powers, but I hang out with you anyway because I think you're a cool guy in your own way.
He's a good role model. I mean, like, he reformed all those psychic villains through lies, but, you know, it worked.
Yeah, so he's probably known for a while that, yeah, maybe Reagan is just, he wants to take advantage of me, but now he actually cares for me. And I don't mind common because it helps him and that makes him happy. So it'd be like he has been on that side of it, he knows what that can feel like. But the difference is like Reagan is like a pretty decent guy at the core of it, whereas Suzuki is just sees everything as below him and anything below him is something that is a tool to be used. So
they're similar but yet different on that key point. Yeah.
But Mob can recognize it and he can say, well, yeah, fun, this is not a healthy situation to be in, you need to snap out of it.
Whereas talking does no good with Suzuki.
I like the way they talk to the shut-in, and he gets to like the core of his character, and he gets to, it's like, you're kind of like me, whereas your man's like, you're not like me, you don't know what I've suffered. And he kind of sees that Mob has suffered similar things to him, making them, you can find a kinship with a person, but like this emotionally stunted man-child is more adult than the guy who dresses in the business suit and goes, I made my mind up in middle school. He's a massive fucking child. It's great.
Yeah. And as well, like, he's going, I was talking about, I'm the most powerful psychic in the world. I'm a self-made man. And Mama's like, I'm the most powerful psychic in the world. I'm not a self-made anything. I recognize that there are people out there who can do things that I can't, like psychic powers or not. And I recognize them and I need them in my life to help me and support me. Guys like you would say you're a self-made man. What, you never had your fucking mom change your net before you? Well, you fucking didn't do it yourself. You had people raising you all your life. So all this respouting right now is complete horseshit. And he calls him out on that. He tries to, like, get through to him on that. He's saying, no, I have the power of all the powers. You can't fight me. Can't maybe change your mind.
Yeah, also that, like, all the other 600 crappy psychics' powers were his powers that he just lent them. And he could also, when he took them back, he could drain their energy as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a very like all for one type thing where it's like I can make an army, but also I can use that army to make myself bigger. Yeah.
I like the fact that Sho just continues to call him Ritsu's brother through the entire
episode. He doesn't know his name. He respects him, but it's like I never learned your name and it'd be awkward to ask now.
Yeah.
And you're like, at the climactic boss battle.
Yeah, and that Suzuki is basically what Ritsu would fear that Mob would grow up to be.
Yeah.
It's like somebody who abuses his powers.
Mm.
Yeah, it's that's the exact economy going on here. But Mob has kind of realized, maybe because he was more of a self-deprecating individual anyway, that's kind of tempered it, and it's more about trying to get him up to a nice balanced level where I recognize that I should be more confident in myself, but it shouldn't be because of the second part. I should be confident in myself as a person because like, I'm a good brother and a good friend. This guy kind of decided around the same point in his life, fuck that. I need to be mature.
Yeah. We're getting these lessons again and again of like, of maturity, like with the body improvement club where they're real worked on, like trying muscles are better than, you know, just psychically enhanced muscles, that kind of thing where it's like the connections you make to people. It's like sometimes you need other people to help you stand up and sometimes you're the only one who can stand up in the situation. It's like, and recognizing those moments. And it's great to see like Mob as a character have all this growth by, getting really mature, growing up. And that being compared off a stunted fucking man-child who's like, I'm going to take over the world.
Yeah.
It's good.
Which is all the more gratifying then where like Mob, he's been patient. He didn't resort to his fists or psychic blasts immediately. I kind of have an idea of where you're coming from. When I'm on top of this, why are you doing this? You don't need to do this. And there's no fucking talking to you. It's from people like you who see people and get a fucking slap in the fucking face.
Well,
boot up the arse.
But to get him there, he has to think that Reagan's been blown to pieces when Reagan comes in and tries to,
he borrowed a gun.
Yeah.
Because I've already, yes, there's people have powers that espers aren't aware of. For instance, I can think of four ways to defeat you. What are these four ways? Well, I'm going to tell you right now.
I might be able to come up with four ways off the top of my head in the heat of the moment if I try.
Yeah, so he tries to ally, pretends that he's going to ally with him just to get close enough to punch him, but then.
What was the four ways? One, try and shoot you. That didn't fucking work. Two, ally. Three, actually just straight up punch you, like cold cock you when you're not expecting it. Was four is like, I'll get Mob to do it? I feel like we've seen all his plans fail up to a point.
Number four, bucket salt. Shisha! Right in the eyes.
That would be good.
But yeah, Sarikawa manages to protect him, but at this point, Mob's already gone into 100% rage. But I like the fact that his rage is totally controlled.
It's tempered rage. You can say it to your man, like, hey, thanks for protecting my master there. Get him and everyone else out of here while I fuck this dude up. Like, it's entirely, I am in 100% control of my rage right now, and I'm going to kick that guy's ass. But everyone else is like, you get out of here.
Like, I've been a super patient dude with you in spite of everything, and you're still being like this. So I guess we gotta fucking take the gloves off here.
The rage is laser focused in one fucking direction. Yeah.
And it goes back to the lesson that he was taught in the previous episode by the other path for Mob, the giant psychic ghost guy.
He actually shows up when Mob's talking about the other people you lean on for support, which I thought was kind of interesting. That guy is technically an ally.
Well, yeah, because I mean, talking to him made him a better person.
Yeah.
Even though
the guy's a monster, literally, it's like, no, you improved from interacting with this monster.
And yeah, then he thinks that Mob's attacks are failing, but then he realizes, oh, what Mob was actually doing was lifting the entire tower off the face of the earth so that they're not endangering anybody else when they're about to go into whatever sort of craziness is going to happen in the next episode. Boss fight, apparently, is episode 30.
Well, yeah. And the ending bit of this, like, was this the first episode where they had a bunch of the former Scar guys and whatever in the Mob's pile of friends thing?
Might have been some in there.
I feel like the show's been in there for a while, but I'm trying to think when they added the rest of them.
Can't remember because I just skipped past the ending. So.
That's fine. Yeah, there wasn't like an after credits thing anyway. So.
No, just tune in next week / this week for the entire conclusion.
I've got to mention on Dororo, at least the PS4 Amazon player has now apparently added skip intros and skip recaps. So that was useful for the Dororo.
That's actually a pretty good function now.
Righty ho. Yeah, maybe next time I do it on Karakuri Circus, I might accidentally skip the entire episode. having said that, I'm not sure there's going to be any more recaps to do.
Mm.
I think we're at the end of the flashbacks.
Well, surely we're going to recap some of the shit that never fucking happened. Or
that may happen, yes.
Yeah.
I think we're going to have to get that. I think we're finally going to... I think probably like 2 or 3 episodes time, we'll get the Animal Trainers flashback.
Ray!
About 20 episodes too late. Before we get to that, though, we've got Rinchi Okoda Chat, episode 12. This time, it was Koji Morimoto doing the old directing and the singer Tamura Pan doing the acting. I'm trying to remember what happened in the episode. I can only remember the punchline because they talked about it so much in the interview.
She's watching TV is basically the whole episode.
That's it. Yep. And there's some creep.
And there's a peeping Tom.
Yes.
Yeah.
We should ask them to work in a song.
I was wondering why that fucking bit was so long, but it makes sense, yeah.
It seems to be how I saw this weird news, like, and finally news item there the other day about these fucking idle girls who hang out in the street corner and try and cheer people up.
Mm.
It had that kind of essence to it.
Yeah, and it doesn't really tie into the episode particularly well, because I like the bit before that I did like where she's going, it's like, man, I feel you, man. When someone's talking about how they just want to help out the local community, and then she's watching this and she's like enthralled by these cat girls dance.
Yes.
Yeah. And this in the midst of her despairing or being anxious,
yes,
of, oh, I'm turning 24. Oh, what am I doing with my life? You're fucking still hanging around in your apartment watching these weird things on the news, but that's okay. It's your choice to make. You're only 24. Don't worry about it.
Like, she's also watching TV as a reaction, because what was the, I forget what the thing she was watching was, where it's like, oh, people, she's watching a thing of tomato getting chopped up. It's like, yes, it slices, yes, it dices. It doesn't even realize it's being cut. And she's like, how could something not know it's being cut? Wait a minute, my boyfriend hasn't called me in like a week. Oh, fuck.
That's me. I'm a tomato.
Yeah. And then she's like, she's watching TV as a distraction. And I guess the cat girls do cheer her up until she goes into like a fugue state and realizes that someone's watching her from across the building with like a high distance lens.
He's like, and, well, he doesn't care. It's like, hey, get a load of this, you creep. Yanks the curtains back. I got a bear in my pubes. Which I'm not sure what that means. Did she trim into that shape?
Naturally formed that shape. I don't know.
Was she eating gummy bears and one of those cows got stuck in there somewhere?
I mean, like, that does sound like her. Yeah.
Yeah, it kind of does, doesn't it?
It could mean a bunch of things, but maybe it's just a mad thing to yell, which obviously it is, as they talk about in the interview.
Yes. I quite like the interview, but I have to say, after last week's, it's...
nothing's really going to compare to that.
No,
man.
Exactly.
Are you talking? Do you see the size of that producer? He's enormous.
He is enormous. Yeah, I don't know where he's come from. Has he eaten the other producer?
Maybe it is the other producer, and he's been working out. That's what he was doing last week.
I don't know. Like, is he a huge dude? Is Koji Morimoto like a tinier man than I realized? A bit of both. I saw, like,
we don't have a sense of comparison because we don't have the same producer to compare everyone's heights off. It's really annoying.
This guy was enormous. He's some kind of a huge ogre, a very friendly, jolly ogre, but yes, still, he's a big dude.
Further size confusion is the gigantic turtleneck jumper and the gigantic cardigan that Tamura Pan is wearing.
That looks so comfortable.
It does.
I gotta say, I was just like, man, what do you call those things? Like snoods or something? It looks like fucking one of those. It looks amazing.
Mm.
Getting snug
in there. I suppose it's like they're going to come in, be in the booth for the day, and want to be able to relax.
And also
the jumper's got like a sound dampening effect, much like the insulation we've got in the walls of the booth.
It could be. Maybe it's to enhance her voice. I gotta say though, the director, maybe not for you, I'm just speaking for myself, but fucking hair goals, man.
he has a very appealing aging hippie aesthetic going on.
Oh, it's so good. I imagine it's fucking hell to maintain, but yeah.
Well, he's maintained it. That has been his look for as long as I've seen photos of Koji Morimoto. He's just got
grayer. Same with the beard. That beard is nice.
I've never seen him with the hair down in a photo. Thing. He's always got it tied up at the back.
Yes. If the hair was down, he'd be like Cousin It. Like, there's just... yeah.
I've seen your hair, yeah. It does get that.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, he's just got smaller and greyer as he's got older. I think that's it. Mm. But again, has he? Because again, there is just a giant man in the room, so I'm not entirely sure if he has got that much smaller. This discussion of he thought he'd be able to do whatever he wanted, and then told them what he wanted to do, and they told him he couldn't do it.
You said in the phone, I could do whatever I want. This is bullshit.
It's like, everyone's got nipples, man. Come on.
We've all got them. It's a late night anime. Like, no kid's going to see this. Like, what if there's a young kid, and they're very close to their mams, and they're staying up late from the morning because they're very close to mammy. And while they accidentally see this, because mam is a big fan of Koro Gen.
They've got very limited range of vision at that age. It's not a problem.
who knows what damage we'll be doing to these tiny minds.
I mean, I'm kind of on his side here. You're adapting a thing that's specifically about a woman who's nude all the time. Yes. I think you should probably be a little more loosey-goosey with the rules of decency.
I do think he's another one of the guys who goes, well, I'm sure a woman would get more out of it than I'm getting out of it. But I think what he's getting out of it, considering they did mention on an earlier episode, that this is published in a men's magazine. I'm pretty sure what he says he gets out of it is exactly what is intended to be got out of it.
As
a form of illumination for the men reading.
It's like, hey, women have a complex internal life. It's almost like they're people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they've all been saying that. You know, we're getting different versions of it. That's a pretty common point. That's like, speaking as a man, you know, I thought it was going to be like this, but actually... Just doing it now. I'm working with working with the actor here doing the script. It gave me a real insight into a world that previously wasn't that well versed in. So
whose revelation? I think it was my favorite one where the guy was like, "I wanted her to kick off her underpants," and all the women were like, "Yeah, we."
No, it was Yosuke Takahashi's.
That was really funny to me because he was like, "What?"
I do it in the bath all the time, but no woman would do that. Takahashi's then, sorry.
That just really amused me. Yeah.
Generally good. I like they were able to get most of the stuff out from the conversation between them rather than needing the producer to do too much prompting.
Yeah, it's fairly natural.
Yeah. Because so there's been a few directors. Obviously, the one who didn't even show up.
off stage somewhere, I guess maybe.
Yeah, but there's been ones where you're like, you can tell they're not really happy talking this long.
Well, I guess they've also they've done the recording session and they're like, now we got to talk about the recording session for fucking 20 minutes. Yeah. Jesus. Okay.
It's usually other guys were saying, so why are you approaching it? But I don't know what I did. I'm like, well, whatever. rather than the directors were interested in this. Oh yeah, I know this comic. I'll do something with this. I do my own take on it. And then you get a better interviews out of them where the guys have said, I don't know what I'm here for. It's a paying gig. I'm just here for whatever, man.
Yeah, you got the impression
treating it like part of the job.
I was talking over you there. Say it again, Dwayne.
They're kind of treating it like it's a part of the job. Like they're nearly talking as you would guarded, in an interview kind of thing. So it's difficult to have kind of natural conversation flow.
I got the feeling that both the actor and the director this time were familiar with the comic beforehand, whereas sometimes it's like, this is the first time they've read it, or either from one side or the other.
It's a paying gig.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I think it's not so much a paying gig as a favour for an old friend, I think is a lot of the situations on here.
What did you make of the animation itself?
I thought it was fine. It didn't dazzle me as way some things did from him, but I think he was pointing out he was also doing it partly because he got to do the bits he doesn't get to do anymore.
I imagine it was definitely more than that, but it felt very like a one-man project kind of thing. Because it's set in one place, it's I imagine he had a lot more hands in in the actual making of it, yeah.
Yeah, I kind of like, it has this sketchy quality again, but I think I was better served with that with the Kobayashi episode from before.
Yeah, yeah, there was definitely more detail and everything going on there.
That's it. We'll see whether there's more. The author, she cottoned on and stuck the name of the show in English in her Twitter name during the time so people would find her when it was being searched for.
The phone call yesterday. Yes. They're doing what, my cock? Who approved this?
No, she seems to be, yeah, quite happy. But she would agrees that, yes, it would be nice if there was some women directing it as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was kind of the thing. Like, this is like a comic, like about a female character and a kind of her secret life, or kind of day-to-day life that people may not be kind of privy to. And yeah, why not get a female director in there who may have like a much higher degree of familiarity with that kind of subject matter? But I don't know. Maybe if you get another bit of this, I doubt we're going to get any more of it. It seems like a kind of a one-off thing, but. If we were to do it again, then I would recommend to do that, certainly.
I think the thing that would allow for more of it is obviously to just get more varied directors and stuff in, more varied actors and everything.
Yeah.
And it might be easy to do that.
It lends itself to experimentation. So.
Once you've done it once, then it may be easy to do that. Because if you look at the producer's credits, at the credits of everybody, I think he's worked with everybody who's directed on this.
Yeah.
So, and from the early conversations, he's like met the Akitaro Daiichi one. They mentioned that he'd been asking him to do this like forever ago. So, yeah, it's taken a while to actually realize it. Or there'll just be another adaptation from other people because this is the third adaptation. So,
yeah.
This approach, I think, is really good. And we've gotten a lot of good. Good content out of it, both in terms of the actual animation produced and also with the interviews and kind of getting to know some of these names you've come across from watching any of this stuff for any period of time.
Yeah.
More into them. I think as well as because of the nature of how short it is, it could be a good opportunity to let somebody who may have previously been primarily, we'll say, a screenwriter or an animator or that know, like,
Try out
a little directing and see what I do. Because, like, if you're wanting for more female staff, I think there's definitely a lot of script writers in there who could, like, maybe take a shot at directing one of these and see how they get on with it. Hmm. You know?
We shall see. Obviously, as we'll talk about next week, there's definitely interest in these sort of varied output of the same character. But that's for next week. This week we've got Karakuri Circus, episode 23, The Demon's Return, in which Georges dies, Narumi puts the mask back on and murders a bunch of puppets, the guy whose name I still can't remember...
The gangster guy, is it?
Yeah, the assassin puppeteer.
Yeah.
Survives, maybe?
Like, I think he's fucked, though, right?
He's pretty fucked. He's... I mean, it is the best removing of a blade from your body that I have ever seen, because it doesn't work the way anybody else would do this scene.
So,
Niall, there's the deliberate, I'm going to get deliberately stabbed by a weapon method. Well, that wasn't the plan. His plan was to... He'd already been stabbed by the weapon. He was just trying to lure Pantalone close enough so that he could then hit him with the weapon because it's got his blood on it.
And his blood is poison.
His blood has got some aqua vitae in it. And again, this should have been mentioned in an arc we never saw.
They do mention it in flashback in this episode, so it's fine.
Fine. Yeah, sure. but rather than pull it out, because it's this big, it's this heavy... He slides his body off the sword, i.e. making the wound bigger.
Yeah, by it stabbed through into his gut, so it's basically like, oh, the blade's kind of sticking out to my left there. I'll just fucking slide it, my entire body off it and cut through my body to get off the sword. It's so nasty.
Let me just finish it off for you there.
Yeah, pretty much. And
you didn't quite
like,
get it, champ, but, you know, like, better luck next time. Let me just help you out. dude.
Yeah, like, even Pantalone is like, you know, you just fucking like sped up your death, right?
Yeah, sped up your death more like.
But what does it even mean? Yeah. But he's luring him by basically telling him that you'll never make a woman laugh. This is, I'm going to, but before I go, I'm going to tell you how to make a woman laugh. Or would smile.
Yeah, because he's trying to like egg him on and stuff, and it's like, you never met a woman smile, have you, buddy? And he's like, actually, that's something I'm very much so programmed for. So if you could just give me some tips, it's like a little closer, three steps closer. What? Nothing. Just come a little closer. I'm dying. I'm. It's a whisper now. You have to come closer. You can't hear.
You've got to give them a hug. Surprise! I'm going to stab you with this sword. Slice your arm open. So he slices Pantalone's arm open, he falls to his knees, and Pantalone's like, but I've still got my other arm, I can still blast you with this air, which I can shoot out my hands, and then he remembers Eleonore going, I will never forgive you if you kill another human, and he's like...
He remembers that after he throws a sword through the guy, so fucking fat lot of fucking good, yeah.
And he can't bring himself to kill him.
Hmm.
Face
turn. He gets to walk away in his... victory, I guess?
Yes.
I also liked your man's thing of like when he was trying to fight him, he's like, okay, so he can shoot 9 shots out of the air bullets from his arm, but then he has to switch arms and he can shoot 9 more shots, but he's got like, I keep forgetting he switches arms, and it's like, so basically he's infinite bullets and he's got 2 guns. Yeah, that's, you haven't really figured out any weaknesses there, bud.
Meanwhile, the new Shirigado is explaining that Faceless's plan is to wipe humanity off the Earth because all they do is take, they don't give anything to the planet. The planet would be better off without them.
The planet would be better off as brains for robots or for puppets. Yeah.
Yes, they would be better for blood for the puppets to eat. And at least that's what Faceless has told this guy.
Yeah.
Because what it really is I want to be alone with the woman I lust after, or the reincarnation of the woman I lust after.
Yeah, it's like a super lame destroy the world plan.
But it doesn't matter because he's the main character, so whatever he thinks is the right is right.
Oh yeah. He calls himself the protagonist in this, doesn't he?
He does again, yeah.
Yeah.
And George is fighting him, and he manages to beat him because while his big sphere doesn't spin as fast as the other guy, it plays better music.
I thought he was actually going to come up with a cool thing, and thought the cigarette smoking was going to come into play. It's just like, his spinny ball thing, it's going faster than my spinny ball thing, but how? And he's like, it's not science, it's fucking magic, baby.
Well, what he says is, it's not how fast your CD spins, it's what music comes off it.
Yeah. And I was just like, that, you didn't have you didn't actually have a plan here. Your plan was just manliness. All right.
Yes.
And then
because it was just manliness, that's what he gets from beating somebody with just manliness. He then gets to smoke a cigarette and die.
Yeah.
Or rather, have his mate smoke a cigarette because he informs him that they're bloody awful.
At least that bit's kind of funny. Yeah. I did like. It's not a bad hero death. My main complaint is this character wasn't built up at fucking all.
No, because his entire dialogue makes much more sense if we'd had
him. If I'd
seen
him fail again and again in the comic.
So when he's first introduced, it's defending this hospital in the comic. And he fails. And he's being an absolute dick to Narumi and Guy. And he fails. So therefore, this bit and all the speech he's making about being given a second chance makes much more sense. You never got a first chance in this version.
Yeah. Again, like, because they have none of that shit built up, all of this stuff it's well animated, it's cool, but it doesn't have the same kind of fucking hit that they want of it.
Yeah, as an episode on its own, it's perfectly fine. And I think the next maybe 2 episodes will be perfectly fine. And I think it'll probably even be better because, we've had more stuff with, Ming Xia, so even though we were lacking her, like, background with her dad.
Entire backstory.
entire backstory. At least we've had enough scenes with her that her involvement in the next stuff should be fine.
Hmm.
It's when we get after this is I have no idea what the fuck they're going to do, because when you see the cover to the next manga, which they should be adapting after, I think they're up to 38 at the moment. I think 39 has Masaru teamed with a whole bunch of characters, 2 of which have not been introduced in this cartoon and are likely to never be introduced. Mm-hmm. Another one has been introduced, but has no relationship to Masaru in this cartoon, whereas there was like five volumes worth of relationship in the comic.
Unless they refer to, hey, remember that time we used to hang out off screen? It's like, I sure do.
No, but the pacing is also a lot better. That's the thing, is because they've now got 13 episodes to adapt. Like 5.5 volumes, 6.5 volumes or something. It's going to be, and a lot of that's going to get cut out because it features characters who aren't in the anime.
I find it fascinating to watch because, like you say, it's not a flawed show. It's actually fairly well made. It's well paced now again. But that fuck up is ever present. It's not like Dragon Ball Super where we could just go, let's skip these episodes. And then eventually we came back when it was good again.
Yeah.
This is a completely different thing. It's still tainted by that to me.
Yeah. It's those early decisions, are scuppering them at this point.
Mm. Yeah.
Probably the earliest decision is saying, yes, sure, we can make it in 36 episodes.
Yeah. Mistake number one.
Next up is Boogie Pop and Others, episode 18. Overdrive, the King of Distortion 5. Hey, we were right. Shiro was the King of Distortion.
His alter ego was the King of Distortion? Is that how it works?
Yeah, he wasn't some fake guy in your man said with the fun buzz cut. It was actually there, but he was like the literal source of it, and the source of it is.
Well, I think that bit still was a dream because then when he went back to, he wrote down the password and then when he went to look at the password again, it was no longer there. It
wasn't there.
And then he disappeared. So I think that bit still was a dream.
Yeah, but he's like still there. So it's emanating from a sort of alternate personality. He made to compartmentalize the grief and guilt he felt from his girlfriend getting killed.
Mm.
Yeah.
And then that had nothing to do with the Moon Temple. It's Moon Temple,
the Moon Temple accidentally caught this thing that was made, this new kind of person or human or existence or whatever you want to call it.
It released this as a result of that, but it wasn't the purpose of it. It was actually two separate weird things happening alongside each other.
Yes. This town has a lot of weird shit in it.
It does. Well, it does. This seems to be like the focal point. Well, the full Moon Tower was designed to lure all those kind of individuals here anyway. So
I think it was hoping to catch someone who wasn't currently awake or to catch someone's alternate personality. Yeah. But I guess it kind of did fulfill its function, but it's half the problem here.
Yeah. And the great deal of the episode is Boogie Pop arguing with the King of Distortion that you're not really a villain. Stop pretending you're a villain. Look, all the things which resemble a villain are this other guy's actions. You didn't lock everybody in here. You didn't gas them.
Yeah. You were specifically locked in here too.
Mm.
You were just as much a fucking victim here as everyone else, so you're not the baddie.
Yeah, that's kind of like a projection of the self-blame, because he's looking back at his actions and activities regarding, Naoko?
Yeah, I'm talking of people who didn't get much time in their adaptation.
that's true.
Yeah, and he's like, like thinking, oh, was something I could have done differently, or something that I did or said that might have changed that, or this, or that, again, like that regret, you feel, and wondering, oh, it should have been me, you know, if this is my fault somehow, and wanted to let blame onto himself. But as well, is a bit of his power then seems to be that I don't want people to have to live with that same regret, the same guilt that I feel, so I want to sort of make their hearts confronted or draw it out from their hearts, because there is this sort of people put up this front sometimes to try and shield themselves, to try and cover up this distortion, as he calls it, they have in their heart, and I go, I'll draw that out of them and put it to rights.
So basically, like, he was developed by the kid to cope with his grief. Something not that one to one, but
it's survivor's guilt.
He's also messed up that he didn't love her enough.
Like he didn't feel enough when she was alive, and that's another part of the guilt. But what I'm saying is, like, so in order to prevent that happening, other people who had regrets and people who they'd met in life and regretted letting go or got or died in the meantime, that kind of thing with that particular girl, he's trying to prevent them from developing a similar thing that he is.
Yes, yeah. But
so he's actually going about helping people. Like, he's the opposite of a villain completely.
But
this.
Then he cocks it up and accidentally creates a kaiju, which threatens to destroy
reality.
Yeah,
the kid didn't have any, like, back... like, the kid's thing is he didn't know his father, and he replaced his father with his crayon drawing of Godzilla. That kind of thing. And it's like, oh, fuck, okay, I didn't know I could do that. I'm going to have to be a little more careful about that shit.
Yeah, and that's what Boogie Bob is trying to say as well at the end, where it's like, yeah, you've been doing those things, but that was only because you've only freshly awakened, like, into this reality, into this world. You haven't got a handle of this power, so I can't say whether or not you're going to be a threat to the world or not, because it's too soon.
At the moment, you're not trying to destroy the world, so we're good. We cool.
There's lots of ways this can go. At the moment, you don't seem. You seem like somebody who should start beating themselves up about things that are out of their hands.
She gives two examples. One's Sayatome. I couldn't figure out who exactly the other example was.
Sayatome, there was like a guy and he's supposed to be one of the monsters, became a monster himself. Or he could be that was bugging me as well, because I couldn't push.
Because I was like, is that from a different story we've not seen yet? Because it didn't quite sound like the Doctor from the Origin episode. And obviously, Boogie Popkin came to the conclusion that Imaginator wasn't actually a threat during versus Imaginator, because turned out Boogie Pop didn't need to do anything at all. I was just wondering whether that was like, readers of the novels, you know what we're talking about. And I'm like, I don't know what that is.
Well, to be fair, like, this might be a story we see adapted later on, because it keeps showing shit out of order. So, yeah.
Yeah.
The fact that Boogie Pop is mentioning a character we've never come across, and the fact that everyone has really pent up about this one girl we've never fucking seen.
She was briefly in the first one.
That was in a flashback, though, wasn't it?
No, she was a lot in the first episode.
Okay.
No, she's wearing different clothes. She's wearing, like, the clothes she walked in there. That's, you know, she's like, that's her dream. And, like, considering that the life she could have had with this guy as well. But actually, it's all fine. You're getting on ground with the young lad, so you'll be okay.
And then we get that one slightly creepy speech with Sakiko trying to figure out from Boogie Pop exactly what she's got to do to get Boogie Pop to kill her.
Yeah, it's like, so will we hang out again if I fucking try and destroy the world? And it's like, Boogie Pop's like, don't fucking do that, bud. Don't make this a work thing. Because then I'll have to kill you.
And then, we kind of get like the deepening of the friendship with, is it Kay? Yeah, Kay and Boogie Pop, which is kind of like weird. It's like Kay, like, gives up being in love with, your boring lad who only gets to show up at the start and end of these stories. Takeda, yes.
Who's, sir, not in this fucking plot, yeah.
But then they've got the weird thing where, like, both of them, you're kind of like, are both of them, like, more into Boogie Pop than who they're supposed to be in love with?
I guess. I mean, like, she's the most interesting character out of the group and everything. But I do like the way she's doing the, whoever fucking Peter Parker's current paramour is, where she's covering up for Boogie Pop, is like, hey, have you seen my girlfriend? And it's like, yes, I have seen your girlfriend. And they don't realize that they're both kind of covering for the same person.
Yes.
It's great, yeah.
But yeah, jolly good stuff all round. If they do more as an OVA, I'll be happy, but I suspect they'll probably move on to doing something entirely different again.
Mm. Well, I figured they've already got their OVA content within the main...
That's true,
one of the series.
Yeah,
so.
That's like...
Yeah, it's good. Pardon me. Again, I was admiring a lot of the parallels this had with Mob Psycho 100, like, on an aesthetic level with kind of weird powers and urban legends and things, but also on a thematic level with trying to resolve conflict through kind of true reason and empathy, and it had to come down to some kind of psychic power battle. Like, in these, some of these things stem from deep-seated trauma or grief or guilt or depression, and the way we would sort of handle that is to just hash it out together and try and come to some sort of consensus going forward. And
I
appreciate when, especially an anime series, does that and doesn't give in to the easy ending of having some kind of tremendous climactic confrontation, like with fists and punching and explosions and stuff.
That being said,
sweet fucking punch on the skyscraper in the intro.
Yeah. Oh yeah, those action scenes which would never appear. also, I'm not entirely sure where the very final thing is taking place, because I was like, oh, they're back in that like destroyed dimension, but then Takeda's there.
Maybe that's why he's the most interesting guy.
Yeah, or maybe it's just the tower has fallen down like, once they've got everyone out of it from all the rumbling. I don't know. I believe the dimension which Boogie Pop sends the Monster Dad to is the ruined dimension we saw them in previously, and that's what was ruined. That dimension was that monster has rampaged there.
Oh. Oh, okay, that's interesting.
All right.
But there's none of that actually in this anime adaptation. But I think that's
I guess the implication. Yeah, yeah.
And to find out more about Boogie Pop, consult your local library.
Yes. I don't want to read. Unless they're at the bottom of a TV screen and there's cartoons above it.
Okay, well, we'll do that. We'll just run a soccer guy demo on the screen. We'll just have a little kind of ticker tape thing of War and Peace running at the bottom. You get to it in no time.
Exactly. Then we've got, thankfully, not the final episode of Bono Bono. It's Bono Bono, Season 3, Episode 53, is it? I thought it was 52.
52.
Yes.
Oh, I might have the wrong one in there. Sorry.
You do. 53 is not out yet. It may be episode one again. Fenny moves. In which Fenny moves.
Oh, so sad. I mean, like, it's one of the goodbye episodes. You know how these things go.
Yeah, not moving away just for the summer. They're going moving away for keeps. My dad is bored of the scenery. He wants to move somewhere else.
I did like the her describing the suddenness at which he made this decision.
Him describing.
What was it, Rolling Snakes?
Yes.
I like Dwayne just ignored us then. I was about to say the same. Just because Fenny's pink doesn't mean he's a girl.
Shit!
don't worry about it. I don't know on the telly earlier today and a car rolls out of two.
So. God damn it! I was remembering that specifically. Fenny is a boy. Fenny is a boy. While I was watching it, fucking stupid brain.
Is this the first time we've seen his mum?
I've seen it before.
I feel like I remember the chubby cheeks before.
But is this the first time we've seen Badger's dad?
I feel like I've seen that other plain face
he's
before,
right
but it's just
at the
Badger's
end.
Face with lines.
Because and Badger and his dad are the ones who don't react to the punchline.
Of course.
But they just stand staring at the new situation. Whereas everyone else does the comedic.
The dead eyes of a killer.
Fall over.
In shock. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because, first of all, Fenny's not going to move away. He's going to stay there, live on his own. But then when he sees his parents leaving, he's like, no, take me with you. I'm sorry, lads. I'm going to have to go with my parents.
And then an even more tearful goodbye.
They wave bye-bye and then they all stop and they're like, why have they stopped? Why is the dad unpacking things?
Oh, I did like.
I said removing.
Who invented that stick? That moving nut stick thing again? I'm glad there's continuity there.
Wolverine's dad, surely. He's the crackpot.
I feel like it was Bono's dad, though, wasn't it?
Someone's created. I can't remember which episode it was, but yes, it was.
I recall Bono's dad dragging it around because it was too fucking heavy or something. It doesn't matter.
You did.
Maybe I'm mixing up stuff, but
And he's dead, robbing his patent there. What the hell?
I just like the incontinuity of inventions in this show. They're only moving, like, not even down the fucking road, slightly further onto the horizon, which apparently has a different view than the boring view several feet away.
Yeah, probably slightly different birds flying above.
Sure. Mm. And I did like them all the kids laughing at his drawing as well. It wasn't that fucking bad, kids. Come on.
Oh, I see. Dying Show also turned up, as did Wolverine and Wolverine's dad. As did, I've forgotten the guy's name, the one who pulls the faces.
Oh, Yamabee.
Yamabee. And also the white creature who I don't know what creature it is. I can't remember the name of it either.
The fluffy one or the
rival
one?
I think it's the rival one.
It would be rival.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Can't think of his fucking name either. Yeah.
Yeah, because that's in the wide shot is when the parents are heading off.
But yeah, they do like like you said, they bring in everyone to say goodbye to a beloved character, that kind of episode, but it's like, no. Status quo fucking held.
Yeah, I was just curious if we saw any other parents we'd missed, but there's even parents we know aren't there. Like Raccoon's dad's not shown up, Bono's dad's not shown up.
Well, I imagine Raccoon's dad didn't show up because he's a piece of shit, and Bono's dad didn't show up because he's a fucking idiot.
Yeah. For a very good reason.
I mean, like, he was probably distracted by something that incredibly amused him, or he was gone off on an adventure or something.
No fishing cat either. Well, I guess fishing cat probably just figured, oh, they already figured out they weren't going to move very far in the first place.
Yeah. Not Boss Bear, though. He was like, oh,
Boss Bear, when he was like, yeah, he was, oh, man, moving away. I envy you guys. And I was like, don't you fucking dare, Boss Bear. You've only fucking brought this family back together.
It's like, you just, they're standing right next to you. Come on.
He still's got the wanderlust, yeah.
The next story is Raccoon in Love.
Oh, that's such a teaser, man.
Boy. But happy, gladdened. There's a weight off my chest there that it's still going on.
Yeah, yeah.
I've lost all structure in my life. Taken out.
Then we're into the weekend and Sundays, and I've got Real Soga Episode 3, Cursed Glade, in which the comedy relief character tries to commit suicide. Three episodes in.
Mate,
is this going to follow any kind of fucking structure? Yeah.
She's getting Gaidai Goji'd.
She doesn't. She gets a hug instead. So, yeah, at the end of the last episode, she videoed what had happened and was uploading it to her video channel and emailing her dad. And then, but we'd not be behind her, we didn't see that, it's like the mushroom monster from the bad guys is behind her. And, oh no, they're going to create a monster from her negative feelings. And they create a Medusa monster from her. I.e., which is basically a monster who wanders around town going, look at me, look at me. Which I was like, that's a really great metaphor for YouTubers. And then the punchline to it is amazing as well, if a little cruel to the character who's tried to commit suicide earlier in the episode. Then the guys get into a battle with the monster pretty much straight away because it's wandering downtown. Ryosa Red Co. gets turned to stone. Because it's going, look at me. And he's like, okay, then I will. Looks at her and then turns to stone. And they have to be saved by, Ryoso Green and Ryoso Black. Toa and Bamba have arrived after that mysterious character had spoken to them between episodes. And they show up and, they go, wow, you guys are pretty useless. Call yourself, and whatever, Dragon Knights or whatever they call themselves, Real Soul, no, the Dragon Knights, Dino Knights are the actual machines. Also, at the start, they'd been down to find the other robot dinosaurs, and they found them and given them names, but the blue one, which is basically a Triceratops, who one of the horns is like a gigantic fuck-off-sized sword.
Nice. Cool.
Didn't like melt the Blue Ranger. Because Melt was being too above his station. He was like, well, they're tools for us. They're supposed to... No, and Pink and Red are like, no, they're our equals. We may have created them, but they're our equals. To get into the cave, they shrunk down Tiramigo so he could get in the cave with them. So apparently he can just wander around at human size, which is nice. Yeah, so they show up and they go, well, there's an easy way to deal with this monster. The green and black guys go, let's just kill her. Let's kill Uwe, the YouTuber. And if we kill her, then that'll kill the monster straight away. And they're like, what? No, you can't do that. But if we carries on draining her negative emotions, then it's going to get bigger and bigger and there'll be loads of people killed. This is just one person being killed as opposed to multiple people.
Oh, what's that fucking philosophical thing? Needs of the many and
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
Wait, that's Star Trek.
yes.
Well, that's
philosophical shit. Yeah.
that's just an episode of Dororo, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ko's like, we can save everybody. We don't have to just kill one person. We just defeat the monster and everybody's saved. And so They head off to do that. Meanwhile, Yue heard them talking, and so she wanders off and tries to throw herself off a cliff. But as soon as the Pink Ranger saves her, but then rest of her energy is drained out. This monster's grown super big. What are we going to do? We'll have to get the other dinosaurs to help us. Melt and the Triceratops one make up. They all combine. They make a big old fucking giant robot and beat this monster up. And Uwe's saved, and basically it's informed, like, oh, because you never had friends as a child, that's why you're doing this YouTubing, and you want everyone to pay you attention.
Oh, yes. Fucking ouch,
that's
man.
Why.
But they're like, but why did it turn people into stone? And then they watch some of the videos, and they're incredibly boring.
Oh, fucking doubly personal. Jeez.
I can't remember if there was a cliffhanger or not. Anyway, it's great. There was like so many plots. To the point where I can't remember how exactly the Triceratops and Blue storyline played out over the thing. Because it felt like three episodes worth of plots shoved into one episode. Which I was fine with, because I was like, this is only three episodes in, the comedy relief character is trying to kill herself, this is going to be a roller coaster ride of emotion and carnage. The one thing I hope we get is some more of the, because at the moment there's like only two of the recurring bad guys, and one thing I like in Sentai is when there's like soap opera going on with the bad guys as well.
They've got all their own shit going.
They start squabbling and falling out and not
getting
I'll
make my own monsters. Yes.
I'll show you. I mean, really enjoying the show, and the direction's really good. I'm gonna guess now there's more like combining, and I've seen the design for when all five of the dinosaurs combine together. I'm gonna guess maybe the giant monster fighters, choreography is gonna get less impressive. Cause goodness knows.
Oh, it just looks unwieldy. Yeah.
It does. The toy of all five of them combined looks insane. I don't know how it's going to move for somebody inside it. but there you go. That's par for the course in these shows.
Probably just put on a trailer. I remember doing that with the Power Rangers that we got here. So we had
the
Megazord and it forms up. You got the Dragonzord and then that goes up on the Megazord. And then you put all that and park it on the back of this robot Brontosaurus or Brachiosaurus and then it just fires all the guns at once. It just kind of trundles towards you. Fires that kind of action going on, I think.
I remember what the cliffhanger of that is. It was the Toa and Bamba, who are brothers, are like, oh, we've got to find our Dino Knights as well. And then cut to their Dino Knights hidden away in some temple. And one's I'm going to get the names wrong because I've not cared about dinosaurs since I was a child, and they've changed all the names of them. One's a saber-toothed tiger, and the other one is a type of stegosaurus, but not a stegosaurus.
Not a kentosaurus, is it?
No. Someone identified exactly what it was. When the gold one shows up, he's even weird. It's like he's based on like a marine dinosaur, which I'm not sure they've done too much of before.
Hmm.
At least not for one of like the main rangers. Good stuff. I highly recommend it. I'm definitely enjoying it more than I'm enjoying Zio.
Hmm.
How about on the same channel, on the same morning? Is there more Star Twinkle you've watched, Niall?
There is. Catch up with two of them there. We've had a little bit of action. They've been out to space. They went to the dog planet. They had a lot of fun in there. And they learned a valuable lesson about how you shouldn't just take things, even if it's for good, if it's for the purposes of good, because you could have just been the same as the bad guys, just running around just taking things because that's just what they want to do. And we had one of Monica, who's like the sort of the prim and proper, the very fancy, very well-mannered one, struggling under the pressure of living this double life of like being the perfect daughter and student by day, doing all the classes and all of the tea ceremony and yada, yada, yada. And being a crime fighter by night, or also the day, depending on when the monsters attack. So the girls are noticing this, and they kind of get together and say, like, forget all of this after-school stuff. It's buckling under the pressure. There's no point in training and stuff. But let's just have a break and just get some donuts. That'll cheer you up. And, you know, just like, have a nice lesson about, yeah, I probably shouldn't be putting too much strain on myself just because I'm wanting to live up to my various expectations. He's really coming down hard and saying, oh, these aliens are about, we've been seeing more sense every day. I'm gonna drive home after school, like, every day, or no, straight home and straight to your after school studies and straight to your pianos and blah, blah, blah. And she's like, oh, I don't want to displease father. If I don't want to let down the girls as well, what do I do? So basically just kind of chill out. And just a nice little moment with Elena, who was also like one of the most popular girls in school, which is a bit more fun, chill out about it. She's not doing as near the level of extracurricular stuff that Monica is, but she still has to help out with her family's flower shop, and she's got like a little like, young brothers and sisters. She has a mind as well. And she's kind of saying to her, dude, I got my own shit going on as well. I might seem like I've got a lot put together, and you know, I know how tough that can be. And let's let you know that I know how you're feeling. And those two idiots over there eating donuts, like the pink-haired airhead one and the alien girl, doesn't know for right from her left sometimes, and they're with you too. So whenever we need each other, we got you back. Like right now, when we get attacked by monsters again. They're racking up the fucking princesses, the Zodiac princesses. They got like, you know, that's 4 out of 12 already in after these two episodes. So probably that's going to be like only one part of the thing they need to finish the story. And then after that, it's going to like unveil like a bigger and badder bad guy or threat or thing they need to get. Or hopefully to go out in space more, because the little bit we got on the dark planet was cracking me up. Lots of good jokes in there. It was the fucking amazing one where, so at the start of all these things, they had a little cold open thing of going, but like, hey, I'm Hikaru Hoshino. I'm in middle school. I love sweets. I love space and drawing things. And I'm also a precure. And then everything, like, they're just barging in and these dogs are saying, who are you? What's going on? It's like, oh, hang on. It's just easy on there. And dogs saying, well, least you can do is introduce yourselves. And she goes, I'm a car hosting, I'm a middle school, and I just cut her off. I thought this random cold open footage. They cut her off part way through. So more of that, like, I think it'll be, it's a bit more exciting when there's seeing popping around between planets, seeing weird aliens and getting up into kind of mischief like that. So I presume, I guess, this plan will expand in scope as this first part of the story. I think getting the princess in is really like one bit of it, and then they might spend more time out in space fighting space crime. But yeah, I kind of wonder sometimes though, has this guy, it's hooked into me, but when I'm watching it and it gets around to, let's say, the transformation bit, I get hyped up and it's like, oh yeah, yes, actually, yeah, this has got me right now. I think I've kept up enough of the routine week on week that I can, stick with this. It's something that I'm looking forward to every Sunday. It's a nice little bright spot, especially when you have your tough weeks. It's just there to help you cheer right back up again, much like they do in the show itself.
The dinosaur is a Miragaia. Dinosaur fans. First time I've heard of them as well. Smilodon, that's what they're called. Them nowadays, isn't it? The old,
I think that's the technical
term. Saber-tooth tiger.
Yeah.
How do you spell that? Miragaia?
M-R-A.
Like Gaia is
and
in...
then G-A-I-A.
Yeah, Gaia is in like the planet thing. Oh, I see. It's like a stegosaurus, but it's got these kind of long model legs.
Yeah.
It's not as stumpy.
Some people seem to think they have spines and some people don't, because the illustrations vary on number of spines, if presence of spines at all.
No one knows how the spikes go on the back of a stegosaurus. Yeah, they're always changing that shit.
Spines and plates. And this is, looks like it belongs in Monster Hunter. I don't know what's doing here.
Oh, it does
here.
A bit, yeah.
Jesus, you're right.
And I like the constant changing thing of dinosaurs. Did you know fucking Brontosaurus back on the menu? Apparently it's a subspecies of the whatever thing they thought it was, Diplodocus or whatever.
Fred Flintstone will be pleased.
Yeah. Fucking
they're
excellent.
Literally back on the menu.
Yeah. Even then it might not even be like this shape where we obviously even pictures are familiar with because of the whole what's that, the skin soup theory? Or...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, if you drew, like, a dog like this, you'd have a horrible, hairless fucking dog with, like, sunken cheeks and no lips. And it's just like, fucking, no. Fucking animals look weird.
Yeah, I think it was more like, you know, like if you look at the skeleton of, like, a monkey or an ape, or even our own skeleton, if you kind of just, like, apply the same principle, it would look super freaky. So...
Yeah.
There could be kind of bits and bobs of soft tissue that could bulge out in these things somewhere that gives it an entire different silhouette altogether, but we won't know. But
turns out every dinosaur had a waddle. Yeah.
Anyways, they still look pretty cool in robot form, especially when they combine and turn into bigger robot dinosaurs.
Yeah. You can't mess with that.
Then, finally, it's Gegege no Kitaro, episode 49, Nanashi and Mana. The end of this year-long story. And the start of who knows how long a story.
Not a year.
Until Dragon Ball story.
Yeah. Until
let's give Dragon Ball all the time it needs.
That's true.
It just take as long as it needs for Nekomasume to grow back up again.
Yes. We all knew she was coming back, but...
Yeah, I don't think anyone knew that. It's going to happen. Okay, you've had her older than you've ever seen before. Now you're going to get her younger than you've ever seen before.
That's a fair balance, I think, yeah.
And to get her back quicker, we went down and asked King Enma to get her straight away. It was like, wrongful killing, Your Honor. We need her back immediately. Because there's a whole thing about they can reconstitute, but it takes, like, centuries. So, for Mana's sake, I'm sure he probably owes him a favor. Kira's bought some ghost crime.
Well, I mean, like, it might have been a legal loophole of she was killed by someone who was never born, that kind of thing, so.
Yes.
Like, that doesn't count. That doesn't count as a kill.
OVA episode, we have this great trial. We already had one courtroom this season, so. Why not do it again?
So it turned out it was the unnamed dead fetus was the culprit all along.
Yep, just that still makes it freaky, though.
It does.
It's so weird.
I assume that's what the yokai is in the eye catch. Because I looked it up, and all I got was that picture. So,
okay.
It did me no help at all.
Don't know. It's a concept I've come across before, actually, me and Dwayne have, in Ushio and Tora, the main monster villain of that, Hakama no Mono, came from a similar thing. It was this sort of entity or spirit that it wanted to be born into this world but could not be, and it harbored all its resentment then and became monstrous. It's probably a similar thing going on here then.
It's definitely a theme I've seen in, like, I think specifically Japanese stuff again and again. So, yeah, it's probably based off some old legends and that kind of thing.
Yeah, but I got the feeling it was specifically dying without a name was the... issue here.
Well, I mean, like, you could say that's similar to, like, a baptism kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
Where they're cursed, if not. Yeah. And this is, like, it really weirds me out. This is like, wow, that person looked just like me, says Mana. I was like, yeah, that's weird. Because she's, like, heavily pregnant with demon baby.
In order to get to the bottom of this, first of all, he needs a pep talk and a pep strangulation. From Nozomi Otoko.
Well, I mean, like, part of it was like, I'm helping, but also, when am I going to get the chance to do this again? Is he thinking to himself? It's like, fuck you, Kitaro.
Yeah.
And he gets kicked in the dick for it anyway, so it's kind of like, take his hits where you can get them.
I never really realized until that actually happened how kind of freaky Ratman's scraggly hands on Kitaro's throat was going to look. It's like, oh, yeah, that should be quite unpleasant.
Well, you've seen him without the fucking robes on. He's just got a nasty body underneath that.
Well, you can kind of see him, he's this fun, kind of up-to-mischief kind of character, but, you know, he could have this nasty streak to him as well.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think the thing he's not saying during everything he's saying is, because he compares himself to Nanashi.
Yes.
And it's basically...
And to Kitaro as well.
But he's... Because he's making the point that, yeah, I'm hated by both worlds.
I don't give a shit.
Well, that's the thing, like, yes. He's the thing. He's like, yeah, he gets the feeling like, yeah, if I wanted, this is what I, deep down, this is what I would do, but in order to distract myself from doing that, I do these other things, these other terrible things, to stop me wanting the worst thing.
To be a better person, I've decided to be a slightly shitty person rather than a really shitty person. And that's kind of an improvement, sure.
Well, it's
it works for him.
You can understand where he's coming from. If nobody fucking likes it, then I have no, it's not, I'm not going to try and fucking do a lot of work to try and make you like me. You know? I'll just do what I want.
Yeah.
I won't pay any heed to it. Mm. Whereas, yeah, in Ashley's case, I will pay heed to it. I will actively take revenge against you for it.
But I mean, that becomes not so much his downfall, but how they can talk him down from it. It's like, you obviously do give a fuck about what people think about you. That's why you're doing all this.
Hmm. Also, Kitaro and Mana when hashing it out. Because, well, first of all, we got to, like, the only way we can't take care of Nashi and his giant demon baby from the outside, so we got to take him out from the inside. So.
So, literally climb into his brain.
Hmm.
I was tempted to fucking rewind it and see if Daddy Eyeball was about in that thing, in the footage that they show later on, and they zoom in, and I was like, was he though? I'm not gonna fucking check.
But Kidero makes his way to the core of this being. It's kind of weird, it's got a whole, like, landscape in the sky inside, and this giant baby.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. It's, like, man, at the core of the source of it, and then, she has to kind of fucking hash it out there as well. She still hates him for, oh, fucking, I'm never going to forgive you. My mom died. But, no, you were tricked. I've seen it all now. I saw it all, like, inside you. Fucking Nanashi was showing you the worst version of events and turned your hatred out onto me. Like, well, what proof do you got? Why should I forgive you? Well, you don't. I haven't got any proof. You just got to this fun. Trust me on this one, or mut me on it. And
that's
been hard to do. There's no, like, kind of easy way to kind of say that one thing. I haven't got any proof. I just want to try and talk to you and try and persuade you. Like, I haven't got any kind of ironclad thing that I can say that, but this is my word against yours. But
it's kind of trusting in her friendship, in her decent nature. Like, yeah,
need to come to an understanding about this.
Yeah,
you know?
yeah.
And even though she was like, if that is true, that I still fucking killed Nekomusume, I still did that. You know, whether my man was alive or dead or not, I still did that, and I feel terrible about it. Like, well, what am I supposed to do about that?
What? Hey, have we lost Nine?
Hello?
Sorry?
Hello?
Hello? Yep. Can you hear us?
Yeah, you could ask me there for a second. Yeah, sorry.
Okay.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah.
Yes. So, basically it all boils down to they get the flashback and, Mana realizes what her name means. As true name, as it's written, is that, yeah, she's the one supposed to give this, restless spirit its name so it can, get some rest. And, I bet the writers were really proud of themselves. Really
such
a clever pun.
It is.
Waiting a whole year to do this.
They have to fight first and they have to, like, get everyone out of the city and you get the great cutscenes of everyone we've met, yokai and human alike, running away together.
Hmm.
I liked you've got the guy with the two yokai who are into him. You've got the guy who looks really happy to see his, faceless friend. I can't remember if there's anyone else in there. Those ones, like,
we remember with the snow,
snow that's
woman. There's a few of them there.
Yeah. It gives him a name. Everyone's back. And they get a message to come to the, she gets a message to come to the, oh yeah, dad's back because he was just absorbed into the foot when it, or the hand when it squashed him.
You can't squash an eyeball. That's the most ridiculous thing.
No. they come back. They're like, oh, everyone's back. Well, no, except Nekomusume. But then she's invited to the forest. Everyone's smiling. And then there is, she's a baby now.
What?
Yes. And he's now going to start calling Mana Chan. Yes. Yeah, that was Mana's reaction, wasn't it? What?
What? What?
Now I'm going to
zoom out
sister.
As she goes, what? Yeah.
Looks like next season's going to be full of baby mischief. Oh, what? What?
But no, there's like four generals of hell rolling up.
And we got to take care of this baby. What a week.
I'm kind of hoping they leave her as a baby for a bit, because I imagine that thing turning into a freaky cat monster is going to be just kind of horrifying to look at.
Oh, yeah, but it ought to be adorable.
Like, horrible oh. And adorable, yeah.
She's
yeah.
trying to claw my eyes out.
Well, yeah, the stuff with her now and Ratman should be additionally hilarious, because, yeah.
Yes, yes.
There's going to be no she's self-control in wanting to chase a rat around.
Yeah.
Though at least he may physically have a better chance of surviving. Yeah, I still think the one from the comics the best, but then she's only ever really in that one story she's in originally.
Mm.
Where she is just basically a feral cat in human form. And really, really wants to eat the Zubiotico. I guess that's back next week with a new character and some new villains. And we'll see whether it sets up a whole... I believe there's an actual YouTuber guesting as himself in upcoming episodes.
After we've seen the damage that they're kind of wrought upon this world.
They've taken the piss out of them enough. They got to throw one of them a bone. Yeah, okay.
Rightio, that is it for this week. So next week, there's no Dororo. So Akodo-chan's gone. Boogie Pop's gone. I'm going to guess there's filler in Detective Conan for much of a foreseeable future.
Right.
So we've got room for new stuff and old returning stuff next week. Four different versions of two Pop Team Epic episodes to watch.
That's probably going to be the bulk of it, isn't it?
I said before, and I say it again, I'm not watching the same thing fucking times.
The good news is the White Tiger version does have two JoJos in it. So that should probably be the one we watch based on the name of this podcast.
I mean, that takes priority, yeah.
I mean, I think we'll still get the impact of it from watching, one, I presume in the runtime of it, they're going to run through it two times anyway, in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you just watch that one bit of it, then you're good. Because if they make it into their jokes, if you can, minor things here and there, you still get the main thrust of the gag or the bit from watching it one time through. Or
there's
two
probably not going to be eight different versions of the animation this time, yeah.
They may surprise you.
I know, they fucking might.
There's only
as well,
one way to find out.
It's either that or we all watch different ones. That's the only other solution here.
It's a place of like diabolical Las Vegas card game where you try to psych all these bluffs. It's like, do I watch all of them or just one of them?
Yeah,
I might miss out.
Yeah, you've got, these are your choices. You've got, Blue Dragon has, two people from When They Cry franchise, and two people from Gundam Seed, and two people from Marmalade Boy, and two people from Mobile Suit Zeta Gundam. White Tiger, which is the one I suggested, has two people from Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex. It has Josuke and Giorno from JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
Mm-hmm.
It has the two leads from My Melody, and it has two of the voices from Kamen Rider Denno.
Yeah, that one seems way more skewed towards us.
Vermilion Bird has two people from Wake Up Girls, Ranma and Genma from Ranma Half, and it has two of the leads from Lucky Star, and two from G Gundam. And then Black Tortoise has two people from Yuru Camp, two people from Code Geass. It has Sasami and Ryo Oki from Tenchi Muyo. And it has, the bad guy and the good guy from Gundam Wing.
It's got That's fucking Zex Marquis. Yeah. It's like Hiro Kiyasu, I'm pretty sure. And so yes. I presume everyone is Hiro Yui then.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
This one, Norsen, this fucking thing, it's a fun check now. Since Star Wars Crusaders, the actor who has played Jojo has had a surname Ono. Because Jojo is Daisuke Ono, Josuke is Yuki Ono, and Jorno is Kensho Ono.
Yep.
What the hell?
Huh.
As far as I know, no relation.
So Jojo's by Ono's. Yeah, okay.
Hmm. Yeah. Crunchyroll have got them all up as like one big block episode, like both episodes in one video. High Dive have... they only had two up when I looked yesterday, so I don't know which versions they've got. Unless they've got it so you can switch the audio channel, but if you can, I don't know how to do
it. That'd be like the laziest way to do it. That'd be nice, yeah.
But I'm going to guess by the fact...
They're just there watching the episode, just switching it constantly. Yeah.
But the fact they've split it... Oh, no, they have split it all up now, yes. So you can also... There is now them all separate on High Dive as well. And High Dive is generally my preference because I think their translation gets a bit more detailed with explaining references you may not get.
Right.
So, White Tiger, I think, because that's the JoJo's one. But on High Dive, yes, they're all separate, so you don't have to... watch them all in one giant lump. Though it looks like they've currently only got White Tiger Part 1 up. Oh. So maybe still be translating the rest of them. Because there's more of them up than there were yesterday. Because I only watched Part 1 of... but the problem is now I don't know which one I've watched already.
Oh, no. It's going to be that as well.
I will say, it's fucking great. Preview okay. for next week. That it's somehow better than it was last year.
Absent Mr. Hardcore Founder.
Yeah, but also allows people to say, I'd like to get in on this shit, please.
Right, right.
Genius. Voice of what a fucking generation.
Yes, not my generation, but yes, generation, because I know that from reading the comic. I think the anime works better for me than the comic does. The references in the comic skew a little too young for me. Most of the time. Yeah, video game references I'm not getting. Whereas, yeah, I think it's a bit broader palette they've got with the cartoon. Right, yeah, but that's for next week. May also be what else is possible. Let's have a look at if they've announced anything else on the old Crunchyroll or High Dive?
On a schedule, let's see what they have.
Crunchyroll have announced... Well, yeah, sometimes the lineup thing's different to the schedule thing. They're very bad at being organised.
These are all old things. What have you got coming up?
Twitter.
Nope.
No, they've got a Peacemaker Kurigani film. A Trinity 7 film.
Goma-chan. No, thank you.
Ace of Diamond Act 2.
Idol Master Cinderella Girls.
Yes.
Second season or whatever it is.
Cinderella Girls Theatre. So it's not even Cinderella Girls. It's the super deformed spin-off thing.
All right. We can't get, probably get, as usual, more of these like the day before.
Yeah. They can High Dive and announce some stuff as well, though. But I don't think there's necessarily anything I was spotted yet that I was interested in. Oh, here we go. They actually have a news page. That'd probably be the place to look. They have got, God blimey, that's a long name. Namu Amidabutsu Yutena, which I believe is like a Buddhist themed gag show. if the trailer was anything to go by. What was their March news? I'm sure there's some stuff in March they've announced. Yes, they've got Why the Hell Are You Here, Teacher? somebody did pick that up. Because I believe that's the incredibly sleazy show that I was tempted to watch.
Oh, God. I mean, we could dip in to say no.
No, I mean, I'm not going to make you... Don't think you have to watch it, because you may judge me.
Just having seen it with your eyes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Senryu Girl is Poetic. That's the show about a girl who can only talk in poems. or chooses to talking poems, and Ao-chan can't study. That's the one about the girl who's annoyed at her dad who writes porn. And so therefore she tries to be incredibly straight-laced, but oh no, she turns out to be horny as well.
Also, they also have popular epic TV shows up on there as well, which could be a whole other version that you may want to see. So potentially 16 versions.
No, those are the same versions.
Oh, okay.
But will the souls be the same? Like, that's true as well. Different from last time.
Yeah. That's what I was saying earlier. That's why I'd prefer to watch the high dive ones over the Crunchyroll ones. Righty-ho, I think that's everything announced so far. So the ones we've got on our, or at least on my watch list, was the Cat's Atelier or Van Meow or whatever they're going to call it. Fruits Basket, Kimetsu no Yaiba, Mix, and Fairy Gone all have first episodes this week.
Okay. We'll give them a go.
Yeah, I don't watch that if Amazon have got anything. They tend to be incredibly poor about telling you what they've got.
Well, when you notice where everything else has gone, and then what's that one or two things that are not in the room anymore, it's probably gone to Amazon or Netflix.
That is true.
You won't see it for months. Yeah.
But I think we already know Netflix Carol and Tuesday is out of here.
Yeah, Netflix have announced everything though, haven't they? For like months ahead at this point. So I'm not sure there's anything else to surprise us, to the point where they've announced more Psyche K, even though it's finished. Which I'm not complaining about. I still need to watch those last two episodes.
Let's see. Crunchyroll adds Bakamatsu Crisis, anyway.
That's the sequel. I think that's already had an anime. It's about the pretty boys in the Bakamatsu era.
Yes. Not for me, but yeah. Whoever wants it, it's coming.
Righty-ho, that is the end of the episode. We'll be back here next week for Spice Girl.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
Spicy lady.
Bye.
Good, happy to shame.